At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's special guest, we have Natalia Kent. How's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us, Natalia. We're really excited to chat with you. Before we get into your work, because I've been obsessed with your awesome, colorful, big prints, can you kind of give our listeners a background on yourself and how you got started?
Sure. Started on this project or started in the photography?
In photography.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Go way back.
Yeah, my mom was a really gifted oil painter, and she always had an art studio, and my dad had an interest in cameras, and I think he let me use his Polaroid camera when I was like 3 and 4, and I would set up these weird things with like stuffed animals and string and like make these weird sets that I still have those photos. I'm like, wow, that is so weird and sometimes creepy and awesome. And, you know, it just grew from there. They always got me like toy cameras. And then when I was, 12, a neighbor gave me an SLR, and then another neighbor lent me a background, a darkroom kit that I did in my basement at age 13, 14. I went to magnet school in high school for photography. I went to the School of Visual Arts in Manhattan. I've just been doing it my whole life, literally my whole life.
That's amazing.
I am a deep photo nerd. I worked in a camera store in high school. I just, deep in that photo zone my whole life.
Man, that's so rad.
I feel lucky. I think I got a lot of tools really early on. And luckily, because not only my family, but my neighbors, they saw that I had this interest. And it's hard to get some of those tools and resources when you're young.
Sure.
And I was lucky to have a neighbor who was like, hey, here's this little darkroom kit. He was a graphic designer, you know, and people really pool, they pitch in when they see that you want something, you know. And I got my first twins lens reflex in high school when a friend's parents were like, we want to give this to you and shoot our wedding as the trade. And
you were in high school?
Yeah, I was I was 16, and I remember definitely missing all the big moments.
Oh man, love it.
But I got, you know, they gave me a camera. It was fun. So yeah, just like really deep into taking apart cameras and doing the chemicals and alternative processes and anything I could get my hands on. Yeah.
Did somebody teach you to do the darkroom? Because I took the high school darkroom class, and that turned into like, I want to build my own darkroom under the stairs. But I was 17, 18.
Yeah.
So I think that's really, really awesome that you were even younger. That's awesome.
I was so young. You know, Ali Berumand was the guy who gave it to me. He kind of showed me what the setup was and what the chemicals were. And then a year later, I took the freshman darkroom class.
Yeah.
So the stuff I was doing beforehand was really muddy and dusty and kind of gnarly, but it still got me like playing in the dark with this light sensitive process that was so fun and weird. And so it definitely wasn't a smooth first year.
Sure.
Stuff. And
yeah, I remember that about when I took photography, like 101 and 102, like it was like, you know, intro to the camera. Then it was the next one was the dark room. Mm-hmm. And I was so scared of like making the chemicals that I always had to develop, like once somebody else was in there and they like put together the developer and the fixer and all that stuff. Cause I, you know, I've said it before on the show. I was like too busy chasing girls in that point of life that I didn't really, I liked the outcome and I loved like taking the photos and stuff, but I still have some of the prints that I made and the contact sheets and stuff. And just like you said, it's just like muddy,
yeah,
way too overexposed. Like you can tell I was not paying attention. Like, yeah. I don't know, it's funny, but yeah, that's just crazy to hear that you've been like in it like that.
Yeah.
Like you knew that you wanted to do this, like, back when you're like 13, you know, yeah, what I mean? That's, well, that's wild.
You know, actually, I was really also obsessed with oil painting at the same time. And I was very serious about that. And I was taking night classes at the community college. And I was really like allowed to blossom in those areas. But the reason why photography ended up being, I remember making a choice because I was really into portrait painting, but that was very solitary. And with photos, I was starting to take a lot of photos of bands when I was like 14 and 15.
Yeah, same. And,
yeah, like yeah, in the punk shows, yeah, I was like, cool, I'm at a squat. Here's a weird dude with a mohawk. I'm only 14, you know, and like just seeing this like social bloom and how it got me into a community. And I took mugshots of all the people I met. And
love it.
It was so connective that really stuck for me. Like, I need something where I'm around people. I don't want to be alone all day in the studio, which is kind of what things are now. But, but you know, I also attribute it to a little bit of like, I don't know, I think there's something to the nature versus nurture question. I definitely was nurtured into art, but also my biological father is an oil painter and he is a RISD professor and my mom is an engineer. So she worked as an engineer, though she also is a gifted oil painter. And I think if you like, consider all of the factors of oil painting and engineering, photography is like the exact middle point of all of those things.
Yeah.
So I think just like in a way, maybe my synapses were really just designed for this kind of thinking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Wild. That's awesome.
Thank you.
So did you study photography in college or was it?
Yeah, I went. So like I said, I actually finished my high school credits early and I tried to do community college. I ended up going to the Corcoran early for like summer foundation. So I knew in that summer foundations class, that's like what the first year students do often. So I had that and I loved figure drawing and I loved all of the basic art classes, but because I tracked so early taking night classes at the community colleges and stuff like that, I ended up going straight into photography. So yeah, first year at School of Visual Arts was right in the photo program.
And is that like photo program as in film photo program? Like were you shooting film or was it in the digital era?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I went in 1999. I started the School of Visual Arts and it was very much analog at that time. Very awesome. Analog. And in fact, my the magnet school in high school was so incredible. It was like run by one of these old white bearded photo guys that like there you couldn't even put your notebook on the table because it was covered in camera gear. And he was taking everything apart and putting everything together. And in high school I learned how to develop color by hand.
Wow.
Not just film, but the paper too. That's when we were terrified because we were like, oh my God, it has to be 93.3 degrees or whatever.
That's why I don't do it.
It was so hard. It was so hard, but it was awesome because he was like, nope, if you want to do this, you have to get it right and then you can experiment. Because I always wanted to like just do weird stuff and experiment. And he was like, nope, you have to be a master at all of these ends of this. And I learned like how to use a pro photo light kit in high school. Mm-hmm. And it was a really, really awesome program. So then I went into the School of Visual Arts that just had incredible new dark rooms and everything set up for like just the state of the art, newest stuff. But it was all analog at that time. And I was immediately going towards the 4x5 Polaroid stuff because I could really experiment with that 4x5 and also like regular film 4x5. And then I was also really excited about 8x10 and 8x10 film and 8x10 negative, Polaroid negative and stuff like that.
Just to be there during the prime.
I know. I was going to say, because, I'm so jealous. You know,
yeah.
I was lucky. I look back and I thought like, oh, this is just what everyone gets. Mm-hmm. But I really, I mean, I knew too. I was very focused from a very early age. So I feel really lucky for that trajectory.
Yeah. For me, I talk about my photography school experience. It was 2003 when we started. Yeah. Oh, and cool. It was like right in the beginning of like, this digital thing is like, we should start looking into this. So at the beginning of the year, we all got our Mamiya 645 as part of our tuition, like these big medium format cameras. And then by the end of it, everybody was buying like the newest like SLR, digital SLR, which at that time was a 10D, Canon 10D for me.
Oh, right. Yes. And where did you go to school?
So I went to school. It no longer exists, but it was the Hallmark Institute of Photography.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And where's that?
That was in Turner's Falls, Massachusetts.
Oh, cool.
And it was like a 10-month like boot camp type of course where you learned everything, like the darkroom, yeah. And you learned like how to build a website, you learned business, like all the things you could have needed to know, especially for that time. But yeah, they've closed now, which is like super sad. But yeah, I remember we spent half the year in the darkroom where, you know, years prior it was all darkroom, you know, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I graduated in 2003, and in that last year we were starting to get Photoshop classes, mm-hmm. And I just was like, I would heckle the professor, yeah. Because it was so bad. It was like the uh-huh. Dune graphic, but it was so pixelated and like drop the moon into the Dune scene. And we were just like, this is like, a
what?
Nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what is this? Yeah.
I hated it. But the reality is like, I did use those skills right out of school. Mm-hmm. I started shooting for a studio the year I got out of school. And it was actually helpful because that was like the very beginning of e-commerce and digital catalogs online and that kind of stuff. So I fought it. Because I just wanted to shoot 4x5, but it's where the market went, you know.
Right. Did you do the e-commerce stuff for long?
So I worked right out of school for this really quirky company called Gotta Have It in Midtown Manhattan. I mean, I think it was quirky. It's a great company. They were really sweet. I shot the first day I was there, I photographed the dress that Madonna wore in the Material Girl music video.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think those files I was shooting were like 2 megabytes.
Right, right. Jeez.
At the most, at the most. And we were inventing it. It's like we were trying to use the studio skills from the 4x5, like large studio darkroom to make something that looked decent on digital with like Lowell continuous light, you know, it was very slapdash. Things are so much more high end now, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what brought you to where you are now with these like big colorful pieces? Like, how did you go from just like, you know, normal photography this like amazing? Well, I mean, I can totally see now you saying the oil paint influence and stuff like that. Like, that totally makes sense now. But yeah, how did you get here? How did you get to do in this project?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I always was interested in alternative processes and, you know, in school and like, I was always interested in breaking down what the mechanisms of photography were. And like, I love a beautifully classic formal photo, but I also think just digging deep into like the materiality of something is really fun. And I have to say, like, actually, because I was tracked so hardcore in photography until school and after school, I actually spent a bunch of years just playing in bands and doing like drawing and experimental installation art. Yeah, it was super awesome. It was like the art world in New York in the mid-2000s was just like, here's all the resources you need. Make weird stuff. We want it, you know? And
yeah.
And like, sign me up.
Yeah, sign me up. It was a super fun experimental time, like playing weird underground punk shows and making weird art and a lot of silk screen and just weird, colorful. I was a part of a group called Assume Vivid Astrofocus, and that was like super maximal, crazy installations. And I have to say, I think in some ways, like the larger pieces that I'm doing now are informed by the kind of joy I felt in walking into a room filled with these colorful wallpapers that were just... Wow. They were just like, whoa, life is colorful and vibrant and alive and weird and subversive and beautiful and ugly. And I don't consider myself a maximalist, but I gained a lot from those collaborations in that period. And when I did come back to photography, I did some film, but I did a lot of digital as like a practical, okay, sure. I need to, because my work, like I support myself through digital commercial work, but I also started driving, I was living in Providence, Rhode Island, LA and I started driving down to the darkroom in New York once a month and just playing and just being like, here I am. Yes. And I did a long research project at NASA. It was like 5 years of digging into their archives. And I started finding these 8x10 negatives of the surface of Venus.
Whoa.
Yeah. I was taking those down to the darkroom, printing those in their 8x10 and larger. And then they just were so beautiful. And it was like falling in love again with my original medium. It was like, here's these beautiful grays and these grayscales, but they're actually radar images. And what does this mean? What is photography? These aren't topographic. These are actually texture maps. And it was a way for me to dig back into like questioning what my medium was, getting back into the spaces of process. And because they were not topographic straight images, they were these texture maps. I was like, well, there's something false about these images. So I started playing with flashlights and reflective materials in the darkroom. And that led to eventually being like, I don't need these negatives. What I need to do is just play with what the materiality of chromogenic paper is. And I started spending more time in the darkroom. And in that time, I moved to LA. And I have to say that the light in LA really has informed me. It's informed my experience and my process and my understanding of color and sunset and midday. And I think all those things really come in together. And I also have a very heavy meditation practice that I've been doing for about 6 years. And I started bringing all of those things into the dark room. I started meditating. I started thinking about light differently. And then one day this kind of just popped. It just opened up and happened. And I made a lot of space for it. And I followed the yeses. And then this project happened.
Man. That's so you are using, or is it like an R4? What is it, like R4A or something? What is the process that you use for these?
What's R4A?
Is it, or what is it called? Like RA4 or something? It's like the color, it's like a wet color print that I have an old Omega like developing head that uses, it says like suggestive use of that kind of, I didn't know what the paper was that you're using for this, because you're using like, you're in a dark room making these, right?
Yeah, I'm in the pitch black color dark room. Yeah, which feels like, oh, I'm back in high school. I'm back with my teenage love, actually. There's so much excitement and love when I'm in that color dark room, and discovery always. But so I don't use an enlarger, but I do use, for the smaller prints, I use Fuji Crystal Archive. Then I actually can't source Fuji Crystal Archive in the 50 inch wide rolls. I ended up, it is a Fuji, but it's not Crystal Archive. And I want to say Endura, but I'm pretty sure that's the Kodak paper. Mm-hmm. It's a paper that they use, luckily, in commercial printing, which is why we still have it. Mm-hmm. You know, all these papers are going away. But companies that still do commercial C printing use this one because it's very high contrast, high saturation. So I print on either one of those two papers, and then I send it into a color processor. I like, you know, carry it out in the black box and then go into the dark room and then feed it into the color processor.
Wow.
So I'm not doing any of the like chemical processing by hand.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was wondering if you were like trade dipping everything and keeping it to temperature and all that wild stuff.
I think that could be fun, but I think what that is it's a little more of a liquid process.
Yeah.
And
you
know, you can see my prints are very clean, and that's because of that mechanical aspect. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Yeah, I guess it would be like splashy if you were.
I think so. Yeah, I think you end up getting a lot of different kinds of aberrations, which I love. I think anytime you open up the process, it can lead to something. But these are definitely about moving and light and color and the color depth that that paper can get, which mm-hmm. I think is its own. It's kind of, for me, like an ode to that medium, which is chromogenic paper. And how long are we even going to have chromogenic paper, you know?
Another sad aspect of this thing, of losing yet another wonderful...
I was going to say that kind of leads me into my next question. Is this like a temporary, like a project you have, like, I'm going to do it for this amount of time? Or like, are you going to do it till you can't anymore kind of thing?
You know, somehow projects have never... I've been asked that question on a lot of interviews, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If I go there and it feels good, then I'll do it. Like I said earlier, art is so much about following the yeses for me. And it's just like, oh, here's this thing. It doesn't look right, but there's a yes there. So I'm going to keep going. And there's another yes. And then there's another yes. And then for me, there's this harmony that can unfold. And then you're like, this is it. This is the yes I was going towards. Mm. There's still yeses. And as I still am in the dark room, I'm still like, yes,
this feels good.
This is great. I'm still loving it. I'm also in a moment where I'm trying to be real about, I have a tendency, like, I could just make work. I could just be in the dark room and make work, and like, no one would ever see it. So I am also in a moment where I'm like, okay, let me also put this out there. Let me do the Instagram thing. Let me talk to people. I have a residency. People are seeing the work every weekend. I'm showing them my process. I'm also in like a quote unquote output period where it's like, let's get more people to kind of see this work and be a part of this in some kind of way.
I love that. Do you think that will lead to like maybe a book or like more shows or?
Yeah, I'm open. I would love if somebody wanted to do a book. I love right now, I'm teaching these workshops where I lead the meditation that I do in the dark room. And then we're doing cyanotypes outside because that's what we have access to. And I'm loving just being in that meditative state that I work in and seeing what people do and kind of opening that up. We're also going to do like drawing stuff. And this is the moment where it's like, okay, I'm in the weird mix of like messy, who knows what's going to happen with this stuff. I have no idea. I have no idea. And that's great. That's a part of the process.
Yeah. I think that's like one of the joys of it is when, you know, you just kind of let it happen, let it do its thing.
Yeah.
I love that you bring the, like the meditation and stuff into this because I shoot predominantly like personal work, you know what I mean? Like my photography is solely for me. Like, yeah, I'll do a couple things for friends or family or whatnot, but I am strictly like for me, and it's more of like a mental health thing than anything, because, you know, life sucks sometimes, and the best time is when I grab my camera or when I'm, you know, developing film or scanning film. Not much scanning, but, you know, I would love to learn some like meditation stuff while doing that, because I'm sure that would intensify everything a lot, you know. That's really cool that you're teaching that as well.
Yeah, I think the meditation in general has just kind of opened me up to what my experiences are on a deeper level. And I think, you know, as I did some training, like formal training with meditation. And I think the more I learn about it, the more I'm like, well, this is just what artists do naturally, actually.
Right. Yeah.
But meditation gives you another channel to like open up space.
Ooh.
That I think, you know, I think really great art for me that I've experienced or feel that I've made, the things I love, I feel like I'm opening up a channel to something bigger than myself, some kind of mysterious other, some kind of like, I don't know, energy source or something. Mm-hmm. And I think when you meditate or like, you know, do the like morning pages, or maybe it's just a walk in nature, you just kind of widen those gaps where that energy can flow in. And I think you do experience it in a different way, you know?
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm just thinking like even taking the time just to like let your creative juices flow per se, you know, like let your mind really, you know, because life gets chaotic, and just to like take time to be like, I'm a creative person. I need to zone in on that, you know?
Let this in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you build methods over the years, right? Like everyone has their style. And I mentioned morning pages because I've been given The Artist's Way, which is that book by Julia Cameron. I've been given it many times in my life, but I'm finally reading it now. And it's actually really great. Like learning about doing morning pages, like maybe when you wake up, you just let yourself write 3 pages of whatever. And it's just a kind of meditation, and it's a kind of check-in. Like, what are you worried about? What are you excited about? Yeah. And then she also talks about the artist date. And the artist date is like once a week, you have to do something that is like fun or freeing or whatever it is. You take yourself on a date, and that lets you have some playtime or, you know, whatever. And it's just making space for that spirit to be like, okay, this is a fun thing that we're doing.
Right.
Art isn't always a punishing thing where there's expectations and productivity, and there should be play in this too. What's
the name of that? But we love book recommendations on this podcast, by the way.
It's called The Artist's Way. And I think it was written, I want to say in the 80s or 90s, but I mean, there's, it's like millions and millions of copies have been made at this point. And
I'm going to check that one out.
Yeah, it's funny because there's this other podcast that I like a lot, which is actually more about meditation, but it's also about business practice. And it's called Reboot. And they talk about the artist pages a lot, the morning pages a lot. And I think it's a great practice. If you don't meditate, it's a way to like have a form of meditation.
I love that.
Yeah, because I always, when I write out my schedule, I do like the whole like iPhone calendar schedule with work. And I, you know, put the show on here. If I have something that I'm doing, I always put the schedule. But at the beginning of each week, I always copy paste, like, I think it's at like 7 o'clock in the morning. I give myself an hour to write, read, look at something that's not just like YouTube and, you know, just like kind of vegging out like normal. You know, I kind of give myself like an hour of being productive, but not like crazy productive, you know what I mean? Like, just like, I agree with that. Like, just sitting down and, you know, writing about your experiences or day or what you want to do, but, you know, it's just, that's huge,
it's
to give
important.
Yourself that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool that you have an hour every day. That's right. So great.
You have to wake up stupid early to do it. Yeah. But, you know, I try. It's not that I reach it every day, but I like to hit it, especially when, you know, if I work that morning or something, it makes going into work not as grueling as it, you know, I feel like I've at least accomplished something towards like, you know, art and, yeah, you know, just that kind of jazz.
Yeah, and even just an hour, like chunking out the time. Like, we don't all have 10 hours a day to be in the studio.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you can't still widen your channels of art making and experience and practice. And yeah, even if it is just sitting and like reading a book or meditating, that's still a part of the practice.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell us about this. Is this the residency you're talking about? Is the one at the Camera Obscura, right? In Santa Monica?
Yeah.
How did that come about? And how long is it? You've got it going on for a while, right?
Yeah, it's so wild. It's a 3-month residency.
Congrats.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's super fun. It's like my studio is right below one of, you know, like a real old school Camera Obscura. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
I walk by it all the, every time I'm in Santa Monica, I walk by it and I'm always like, I got to go in there. Like,
you have to go in. Oh my gosh. It's incredible. Are you based in LA?
Yeah, I'm in LA. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you have to go in. It's beautiful because they built it nicely. It's like a nice black room, and then there's this circle in the center, and you turn the wheel and the circle moves too.
Ooh,
it's very mesmerizing. Yeah, it's super fun. And, you know, it's that weird Camera Obscura thing where you feel like you're kind of watching TV because people are moving, but you're like, no, but I know it's live.
Right,
and then
right.
The palm trees move. It's so surreal. It's so amazing.
There's also a Camera Obscura at the observatory.
Oh, that's right.
Too, like a small one, but yeah.
Like the little one. Yeah. It's cool.
They're wild.
Yeah. And it's neat to think like, its roots are actually for painters, right?
Yeah.
So that residency, it's actually just an open application and it's open right now. And I highly suggest people living in LA or if someone wants to come visit LA, I don't know what those stipulations on where you have to be a resident, but it's an open application. It's open right now. And basically what it is I'm teaching a workshop every weekend, every Saturday. So like I said, the meditation and the cyanotypes. And then I just have this like open all glass walled studio, which is like awesome in some ways because it's like cool, it's its own camera, and then it's also so much light, and I'm like, oh my god, my eyes are burning. It's intense. It's right, I mean, I'm watching the ocean, I'm watching the marine layer fade, I'm watching
gorgeous.
The sun move. It's incredible. It's a true gift. And I'm just playing in there. I'm just making space for, you know, I just threw a backdrop up. I just put some filters up. And a lot of my play is in the darkroom. So I'm a little bit like, what do I want to do here? But it's just another play space. And I feel super lucky and it's great. So yeah, 3 more months. I'm there till November 12th.
Wow.
I know.
I'll be there. I'm going to make time to come do that for sure.
Yeah, come by for sure. Yeah.
And anybody else in LA, all of our LA listeners.
Yeah.
We should all go together.
The workshops are on Saturdays and they're listed on the Santa Monica Cultural Affairs website. So definitely sign up. They're free and they're fun and you'll make a cyanotype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah, right? So one more question about your prints. Well, maybe not one more question, but are you selling these? Are they like one of a kind?
Yeah, so they're one of a kind. The movement artifact is what it's called. And that's really about how I'm in the darkroom moving and shining lights and making shadows. And I do my meditation. And each one is one of a kind. I was getting a lot of requests from friends and people that can't pay at the gallery prices. Mm-hmm. So I do now have a small edition. And those are at a little bit more accessible price point for people who can't quite pay for the originals.
Right.
So now there's a set of edition prints that come in 8x10 or 16x20. But then I do have original 8x10s, original 16x20, original 20x24, and then 50x76. Are the large
Man,
50x76. I love that.
Right?
I love it.
It's super fun. When you walk in front of it, you're like, wow, this is a portal. Something's coming out. It's a real gift. Like when I that was the first time that I actually invested in that size paper with this project. And it was, you know, it's a risk because you're like, wow, I'm going to spend $600 on this roll of paper that maybe this is too much for me. And it was like, it's like 100 pounds just to lift it. I was like crying the first day. I believe it. Yeah, like I can't move this. And what if someone walks in and
the whole thing's ruined?
But it was so opening to be like, wow, I can have all of this space and work with all of this space and material. And for once, I felt like I was dipping into the freedom that sculptors or painters can have by not being constricted by this like small zone that we often are when we print in the darkroom,
you know?
So I love that project. I feel super happy for it. And yeah, super fun.
Are the big ones hung anywhere? Do you have any shows?
So not right now.
Okay.
I did have another show up downtown at this space called Ladies Room. And she's doing a group show. I believe it opens in September. And that is about art and the occult. And I think something about the sun. So there will be one of the larger ones hanging at that in September.
Cool.
Man, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Annie Wharton is a curator here in LA and she's great. She's been dipping into a lot of awesome work and she's showing actually this photographer's prints from, this photographer was the like friend/in-house photographer for that cult, the Source family. Do you guys know about that?
Yeah. Wild. Yes.
What is that? I don't know.
I didn't see it, but there's a documentary online somewhere about this family in LA. And I think it's this guy had like 100 wives or...
What?
Yeah. I don't know. Do you know the story better?
I didn't watch it, but okay. I've seen it. But we're big cult fans in this house. So we try to watch all that stuff.
True crime stuff too.
I'm going to have to watch. I've seen it a bunch of times though. So now I'm definitely going to have to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. The show should be great if you guys are in LA.
I think it's
the first time these photos are going to be shown and she's showing them in conjunction with a few contemporary people who are also working with like mysticism. And since my meditation practice dips into that and
that's cool.
September and I have smaller prints in the residency that are out for people to see.
Do you ever shoot any traditional stuff anymore though, like any, you know, do you just like I carry a camera around with me everywhere I go, do you still find yourself doing anything like that now, or are you just kind of zone focused in on this project at the moment?
I have a Pentax 6-7 that I really love. And so I'm super into surfing. And it's an obsession that just kind of came around for me over the last year. And I bought a really long lens for that camera. And I'm hoping to I'm hoping to spend some time doing that stuff. If I travel like on more, I went up to Big Sur and I wasn't surfing there. So I took some photos up there. You know, I love film. I love getting film developed.
Yeah.
I love the whole process of exposure, light meter, all of that stuff. So I am experimenting a little bit with that stuff. I also have a commercial practice that I shoot still life product work.
Okay.
And I've also been working like in museums and cultural heritage for since I was out of undergrad. So I have a very, very technical side to my practice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Especially the museum work is like you have to really know color science and the technical aspects of you know, art imaging. That appeals to me. What I like about the product work is it gets a little more creative and fun and weird and splashy. And
Yeah.
So that's the flip side to my fine art practice is this commercial practice.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend. She's a pretty popular painter here in town. And she was just like, hey, can you take some photos of my paintings one of these days? And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. No, I was going
to
say.
I don't know. That seems like to make it look perfect and you know geez,
you were a black and white guy like sure I'll do them in black and white.
Yeah. Do you want black and whites done? Sure, I gotcha.
Yeah, oh, it's intense. I mean,
yeah, I believe it.
Like I said, right out of school I was shooting those weird objects, and that kind of started me on that path, and I started working for galleries and artists and museums, but it was a challenge. It was definitely an uphill for a long time.
Yeah,
and
I bet
I worked with the Harvard Art Museums for years. I learned a lot there. I'm working on a project with the Getty. You know, it's like, I really do love it, but it's certainly, it's a very specific process. But again, I think it's that like engineering side of the brain. And I do find it really fun and engaging. And you get to be in the room with Manet's and hold a Bauhaus sculpture. And
That's so crazy.
I love that just like, no matter like what aspect you're like around art or like creating art.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up going to museums and, you know, I grew up in the DC area and they're just all the free museums. Mm-hmm. My parents were really about that kind of culture. And yeah, actually last year I had a really favorite project with the cultural heritage stuff, which is that I photographed. Did you guys know about the glass flowers at the Harvard Herbarium?
Mm-mm.
So no. in 1886 to 1936, this father and son, these glass blowers made these incredibly realistic. You can't tell the difference between a plant and these objects.
Whoa.
Wow.
4,000 objects. They look exactly like if you had a dandelion on the table next to one of these, you would not tell it apart until
That's crazy.
A microscope to it. They're incredible. So they were commissioned by the Harvard Botany Department to make teaching models for students because it's before photos and it's before any kind of actual preservation. So it's like a flattened flower or a grayed out flower from being in a book or a jar wasn't going to cut it.
Right.
Yeah.
I highly suggest looking at it up. They're called the Blaschka glass plants and flowers. And I just photographed a book of that work. Very highly creative with the amazing curator there, Jenny Brown. And that's going to be coming out next year on Scala Press. So I'm very excited about that.
Wow. I'm just like picturing like what like one day on set for that must have been like. Just like
it was so intense. I mean, just like being around something glass that was like,
that's what I mean. Yeah. Like, I'd be like, don't bring it near me. Don't like,
yes. And it's laying on a sheet of glass so that I can light it from below. Goodness. It was incredible.
Wow.
I mean, had I not had, you know, 15 years of art experience, I mean, you really have to be a very specific person to do that project for sure.
I can't wait to check that out. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, totally. There's some images on my commercial site, which is Subject Object Manifest. So there's like a little preview on there.
Cool.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to check that
out.
Yeah,
we'll link that below too.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with a listener question for Natalia after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code ANALOGTALK10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this is a show friend. This one comes from Chris Visser. And he asks, he says, your work is so colorful, but do you have any interest in black and white? I want to know this too. I'm like strictly black and white.
And I like that your screen is black and white too.
Can you tell I'm into it a little bit?
You're into it. Well, like I said, with I was doing these Venus prints earlier, and those were these radar 8x10 images that just had these crazy, gorgeous gradients of black and white. And I am really drawn to that. I think that black and white does something to the brain that I don't actually think we understand. There's something about super high contrast. I was in a painting show with my friend Claire a couple weeks ago, And there were these gorgeous black and white Sumi ink paintings. And we just, my eye just kept going back to them. And I was like, there's something happening in the brain that I don't understand. And I love this. And I do love black and white. I think this project right now is definitely about the chromogenic paper and the way light interacts with it. And I'm working with those materials and those questions. But I definitely, I have black and white projects on my website. And I can see something going in that direction if the yeses take me there.
That's cool. A great answer.
Yeah, I could see like the color paper being like way more sensitive too, because black and white, I feel like is, it, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you do what you do in there, but I just could imagine it being like totally like washed out. I don't know how you would do like a gradient like that with playing with like, I don't know. Yeah, anyway, that's cool. I'm just trying to think, about how you would make it like that. Like, I don't know. That's cool. That's cool. That's an awesome answer, because I feel the same way. I feel like, I mean, obviously, like, I am 100%. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love color, too. And I love seeing, like, extreme vivid color or just, like, pale color. Like, I feel like it tells so much more of a story, like, when you use color. The reason why I love black and white so much is because it keeps things, like, timeless.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you take a picture, you know, of an old car in 2019, it could be, you know, 1957 or something like that. Like, you don't know. Like, that's why I love the black and white process so much, because I just feel like it keeps it timeless. But yeah,
with because you're shooting, does black and white give it a level of abstraction that takes it out of the real, that makes it feel more interesting for you? Is that
yeah, I think so.
So because I'm working with abstraction, it maybe needs a little more of the real.
Yeah, because I feel like, I know it sounds like overplayed and overused, but the word cinematic, like, I feel like when I shoot black and white, like, I'm shooting very, like cinematically, like, just like, it's like a part of a movie. And I always try to, like, make my stuff look like that. Like, I always have a theme to what I shoot towards. And, you know, I do try different stuff every once in a while, but it's always the same thing. I always go back to the same thing when I'm shooting black and white. Like, it's, I don't know. I feel like it's like a story in each photo. Like, I'm not the best at shooting like a body of work. I feel like I'm better with a single image most of the time, but I don't know. I think I'm better at storytelling with black and white. It's easier for me. It's kind of how I see kind of thing. Like, like when there's color involved, I'm so distracted when it comes to shooting it. I'm like, oh man, that big green trees in the background, and that's all I can look at now, instead of like the embrace that's going on like on the street or something like that. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
I think black and white definitely has a way of letting you, when you say cinematic, I actually think mood.
I was gonna say the same thing. Yeah, moody for me, because I shoot a lot of color, and then when I do shoot the black and white, I'm like, ooh, this is so moody, I should shoot more of this. Like, that's like the right word.
Yeah, because you, for me, movies like give me these moods, you know, like you walk out of a good movie and you're like, wow, I feel dreamy, or I feel so sensitive, you know?
Yeah.
And I used to call it movie mood. Like when a really good, when I was a kid, a really good movie would just floor me, you know?
Yeah.
And a good photo can do that too. And I think it's mood. I think it's like emotion and mood, and black and white makes it more graphic, so you're reading more about kind of what's happening in a way, you know.
Yeah
I do link a lot of emotion to color, I have to say. I think especially with my work, I think there's something very kind of like unknown that happens when you look at it, but I think there's, I don't know, maybe joy or confusion or questioning that you see when you see those planes of color out in the world, you know? And I notice it too. I'm like, wow, there goes the city bus and it's bright blue and orange. Is that doing the same thing my photo's doing? Maybe.
That's okay.
Whatever. It's a bus. Everyone gets to look at it. Cool. Yeah. You know? And I think color does have, like, it has effects on us, you know?
And that's for you and I, you know, in LA, like, because I think one of the reasons why I shoot so much color is because you've got these blue skies and, like, you know, the green and all the crazy colors.
So, I
have to, like, I mean, for a while I was like, this week I'm going to shoot a black and white roll, because I just never did. And now black and white has been more, like, in my, like, repertoire, you would say. I do a lot of work with this musician, and anytime we're in the studio, it's like I only bring black and white. Because it's moody. You want the moody, like, artsy, you know?
And indoor, I think black and white makes a lot of sense. But when you said that, I was like, wow, LA is the city of color.
Yeah.
And New York is the city of black and white.
Yep. I can see that.
I don't know. We don't have to put them in categories, yeah. obviously. New York is filled with beautiful color. But New York lends itself to like something classic mm-hmm. like that. And LA yeah. kind of is more like 60s, 70s
yes.
pop, oversaturation, Hollywood, yep. color, crazy.
And that's what I love about it.
Right. Yeah. Me too. Totally.
That, I mean, that makes sense. I'm from the East Coast, so I'm, yeah. you know, I'm disgruntled and moody.
And hey, I'm from the East Coast,
chip
too.
On my shoulder.
Hey, I am too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just letting that's LA why... do its thing through me.
Right.
So
yeah, yeah. Nah, that's cool.
All right.
Well, yeah, so that I guess that's going to bring us to the second half of the listener interaction. And the first question is always, desert island, you could only take one camera with you. What camera is it going to be?
Wow. One camera.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there's unlimited film and developing and all that fun
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The lab's still there.
The lab's
yeah,
still
the
there.
Yeah, the lab.
It's like
there's
the
a tiki
thing
lab.
Lost yep. is right. actually yeah. the photo lab.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if I was on a desert island, that would mean I would have all the time in the world. Mm-hmm. So because 4x5 takes a long time, I would probably go back to that. I would probably go back to my field camera or, you know, yeah, I would actually, or I would, okay, can I do an or?
Yeah.
I would do an 8x10 with like a nice long telephoto lens that had a good macro setting so I could play with like, not a super long telephoto, but like maybe a 200 because I think that's probably in the somewhat prime range for a 8x10 camera.
Yeah.
With a really, really strong macro setting. Definitely some extension tubes because I like to play with extra macro.
Ooh.
And then maybe a wide angle lens too, just so that I could recognize or like interact with the landscape. So that's my long answer.
Yeah. It's a good
An
one.
8x10 camera. Yeah.
Love 8x10.
Yeah.
Still haven't been able to shoot it, but I love researching it and lusting after
oh,
it.
Oh, you can't.
Much
there's
so.
Nowhere to rent an 8x10 camera?
I mean, I'm sure there is. Yeah. I have a 4.5. I have a really nice Toyo that I shoot, but
yeah is it a field? The field camera? I've got a. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's yep, what I yep. have too. Yeah,
yeah, I love that camera so much.
Yeah,
I haven't shot that since photography school.
Yeah, it's a project.
Get on it.
I should.
It is.
Rent one too.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, do you want to give the second
yeah
half
the second
of the
half
question?
Of this favorite camera question? It's kind of your white whale camera, or is there anything you're like lusting after right now but you don't own but you've always wanted?
Well, because my creative process is sans camera, I have to say that if I could buy a camera, it would actually be for my commercial work because I love that work too. And that is a creative process for me as well. I would buy the newest Hasselblad camera.
Oh, yeah,
the newest
yeah, yeah.
medium format. Yeah. I don't know what they're calling it now. I used to have an H4, but I don't know whatever the top one is, the like 100 megapixel 4-shot Hasselblad.
It's so a beast of a camera.
Yeah. Yeah. I worked at Harvard and that's what I shot with there. And I was a part of the purchasing process. So I know a lot about their programs and like the in-depth color science of what they're running right now.
Oh,
and
cool.
I love the look of that camera. I did a lot of comparisons with like the Capture One equivalent, and I really think Hasselblad, it's just got a beauty and a
yeah,
a
they're like
it.
the leading ones for the medium format digital, right? Like
they were leading. I do think, to be honest, Fujifilm has a new medium format that's really affordable, actually. And Zeiss makes their lenses, like it's the same manufacturer. So if you want something that's a little bit more priced for accessibility, I do think that's like everything is totally changing. So
right.
There's so many medium format digital cameras that are happening now, and I think they're beautiful. Staying on the analog talk, since that's the theme, I know that swaying into digital, but I love digital too. I think it's its own, I think it's a different medium, to be honest. I think it's like a different idea, a different medium. So I'm not lusting after an analog thing right now. But because I don't know. I think there's access to most things, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
Good answers.
Yeah. This was a great episode, Natalia. Thanks for joining us. We really, this is really refreshing to talk about art in this way. So thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Yeah. I'm so, honored to be a part of this show. I love the people that I meet through that intersection of like photography mm-hmm. and art making, and like it takes a certain kind of thinker and it takes a certain kind of mind that I'm always like, ooh, you're a nerd like me.
Yes. That's the best.
Yeah. So I'm psyched, and yeah, if people have questions, they can reach out. And,
Where can everybody, do you have a website and an Instagram? Where can everybody check you out?
Website, Instagram, website's nataliakent.com, Instagram, Natalia_Kent. And you guys, I guess you'll link some stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll link it all below. Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
And Timothy, where can everybody check you out?
Guys, you can find me on Instagram. It's at Timothy Makeups. And I also make film photography related YouTube videos. You can just go to youtube.com, go to the search bar, just type in Timothy.makeups or Timothy Makeups, whatever you want to do. There's some videos there. I got some new stuff on the way. Chris, where are you at?
So I'm Crispy Photo on most of the things, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. And then we have Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we have a Facebook page and a group, and that's it.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome.
Thanks again, Natalia. We really appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
This is awesome.
What a treat.
Yay. Bye, guys.
All right. First off, Chris and I would like to thank Natalia for being on the show. This was a bit of a different episode, more focused on art and just, I don't know, it had a really good vibe to it. I'm really happy with how this came out. And, you know, thanks again, Natalia, for being on the show, talking about your awesome, colorful, beautiful art images. And guys, that brings us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. We are rolling out some new stuff over there. We're going to be posting the week's episode a day early if you are a Patreon. And so Tuesdays, the show will come out for Patreons only. We're going to be doing some live stream stuff like we've talked about for a while. Going to be doing, there's the print giveaway section. I'm still going to be trying to post the videos. We do videos for these. If we get approval from the guests to post the video, I'll post the unedited video as well. There's just a bunch of stuff over there, and your support means absolutely everything to us. Thanks for all the Patreons who have already joined, and thanks to the Patreons who will join in the future. We appreciate every single one of you, and we will see you next week, guys. Yeah. Cool. All right. Have a good week. See you soon. Later.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.